You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome in to a brand new edition of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, and this is the show where you get an inside look at everything going on with your favorite basketball team. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek mobile app for the easiest way to buy sports and concert tickets, and by using the promo code LORockets, that's all one word, no spacing, you can get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. First off, I want to open the show by apologizing for our brief absence. With this being the slowest point of the basketball year, it was really an opportune time in the calendar for me to go on vacation for a few days. My wife and I went up to Washington, D.C. to meet up with some old friends, and we also took in a little bit of that Astros and Orioles series in Baltimore. Of course, the Astros won 3 or 4 games, but as luck would have it, I picked the one loss of that series to go to, and it was a brutal loss, a 13-5 loss in which Tyler White, first baseman, was pitching by the 8th inning. Anyway, because of that, while Locked On Rockets remains the most active podcast covering the Rockets, we have had a brief absence while I was out of town. But I am back in Houston now, and even with Rockets training camp still a month away, there is a bit of new news surrounding the team. The most interesting story that I've seen are the projected win-loss records from Kevin Pelton of ESPN. For those of you who don't know Kevin, he's a great reporter with ESPN Insider, covers the league as a whole, and he's excellent with analytics and some of the more advanced metrics. And so what he does in projecting these records, he uses the real plus-minus ranking, or RPM for short. And for those of you who aren't familiar with RPM, what that does, it estimates a player's on-court impact on their team's performance, and it's measured in terms of net point differential per 100 offensive and defensive possessions. RPM also takes into account teammates, opponents, and a slew of other factors. And Kevin's found that when using that alongside playing time projections, it can be a very accurate predictive tool. The hard part is to accurately project the playing time, because there are all sorts of things, such as injuries, that can play a role. So what Kevin has done to try and project playing time is a formula that estimates games missed based on the number of games a player has missed over the past 3 seasons. And he does adjust that for any off-season injuries or suspensions, as well as his own estimates for how a given team's rotation is probably going to shake out. Most veteran players are rated using a multi-year predictive version of RPM, which includes a typical aging curve that, you know, players in the beginning of their career are typically going to show some improvement. If they're in their 30s, they're probably going to decline in efficiency. And on the flip side, newcomers to the league and players who played too little to have much of an RPM rating are rated using a projection system that Kevin uses, which incorporates both translated performance from the NCAA college level as well as professional leagues besides the NBA. And in recent history, it's been a pretty accurate tool. Last year, it forecast that the Trailblazers would be a lot better than expected. It said that the Celtics would maintain their second half success from the year before, and it also predicted that the Milwaukee Bucks would fall out of the playoffs, which no one saw coming. Perhaps most impressively at all, 2 years ago, RPM foresaw what no one else did, and that's the rise of the Golden State Warriors. I can remember sitting here 2 years ago, the Warriors coming off a 6-seed season with a very similar cast of characters. The only difference was that people could see Steve Kerr as head coach instead of Mark Jackson, but based on the models, RPM was able to see a leap forward that analysts and traditional methods might not have. The full story is on ESPN Insider, which you do have to have a subscription to access. If you don't, though, there is a version of it on the Clutch Fans BBS that you can access. And as far as the Rockets are concerned, it's pretty positive. They have the Rockets forecast at 45.8 wins and 5th in the West. That would be a 46-36 record. But the thing to remember is that it's more about the ranking than it is the record. These projection systems before the year don't have a lot of variance, because really, if teams are healthy, there isn't a huge gap between 3 and 10 in the West. You know, we know the Warriors are going to be the number one seed, barring something extraordinary, and the RPM projection system does have that. We also know the Spurs are probably going to be the number two, just as they were last year. And after that, it could go a number of different ways. And so the win totals, what they have the Jazz at third with 47 wins, and shoot, the Grizzlies at 9 with over 39 wins. So you have a very narrow band, and that's because before the year, these teams are really not all that different. Now, some of them are going to have injuries, some of them are going to have good chemistry, some of them are going to have bad chemistry, and when that stuff happens, there's a snowball effect. Some teams are going to be better than expected and overachieve the way we saw with Portland last year. Some are going to underachieve the way we saw with the Rockets. And so while all of this has, you know, a gap of practically nothing from the third and fourth seed all the way down to the 9, I don't think it's actually going to play out that way. That's because these metrics, you know, they're inherently biased towards 500 because a lot of teams outside of just a few elites, and we're talking Golden State, Cleveland, to a lesser extent, San Antonio, there's not a huge ton of variance. You know, you can make a case for a lot of these teams, including the Rockets, and you just have to let the games get going before you can see, you know, who's going to have a positive snowball effect and who's going to have a negative. And again, all in all, this model is pretty bullish on the Rockets. The teams that I think most Rockets fans see in competition with them this upcoming year, other than the Jazz, it sees the Rockets as better than all of them. It has them ahead of the Thunder and Russell Westbrook. It has them ahead of the Portland Trail Blazers. It has them better than Memphis, who it actually predicts to miss the playoffs. Perhaps the most interesting part of it to me is that it predicts the Clippers to be barely better than the Rockets. It has the Rockets at 45.8 wins as the 5 seed and the Clippers at 46.3 in the 4. That's literally a half game difference. And what Kevin says in his analysis is that, you know, given the fact that the Clippers won 53 games last year without Blake Griffin for much of the year, a 7-win drop would seem like a surprise. However, RPM sees several key players on the wrong side of the aging curve. And you can make the same argument with Memphis, who RPM has as the 9th best team in the West. So when you look at it, I think a lot of people want to put the Rockets as a mid-tier team in the West, but really, the only teams that are clearly better are the Warriors and the Spurs. To other teams, you know, there's a brand presence with the likes of the Clippers and Grizzlies that have been consistent mid-tier playoff teams, and the Rockets weren't last year. The Rockets barely snuck in as the 8th seed, so I think there's a tendency among a lot of fans to put the Rockets a little bit behind them. But when you just look at the rosters, you know, maybe those teams keep their chemistry, maybe the Rockets don't find it, who knows, but there is a basketball case that these Rockets, rejuvenated with Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella as the starting center, Mike D'Antoni as the new head coach, that, you know, these Rockets, from a basketball standpoint, can be as good as almost anybody in the West behind, you know, the Warriors and the Spurs. Even the Jazz at the third, well, shoot, the Jazz had a worse record than the Rockets last year, and the Jazz are only projected to have 47.6 wins. So really, what you have with the Rockets in these RPM rankings, you have them at a strong 5, really as, you know, as close to 3 as they are to 8. So there's a lot of optimism that you can take out of this. There's also another good story on Sporting News from Scott Rafferty on the role of James Harden in Mike D'Antoni's offense and why, though some people have been skeptical on Harden in that Steve Nash role and how Mike D'Antoni said he could potentially average 12 or 13 assists per game, Scott sees a case for it working. You know, Scott is Crab Dribbles on Twitter. He's got a great film breakdown of it. And, you know, while we're in the dead period of the NBA calendar, this is a great time for that kind of analysis. And so even with the landscape being limited in terms of actual news, we're still waiting to hear anything on Donatus Moniunis. There are some very good pieces of journalism if you keep your eyes peeled. And I am going to talk about that in a minute with Salman Ali. He's the managing editor of Red Nation Hoops. He's been a guest on Locked On Rockets before, and so I'm thrilled to have him joining the show. He's standing by. But in the meantime, I do want to throw another brief shout-out to our friends at SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a while, and really, it's hard to find the best deal for the game or show that you might want to go to, and a lot of the older ticket sites don't want to change that model. SeatGeek, however, is different. They've come along and created a really strong app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is very useful for diehard fans like us because, first off, it's very mobile-friendly. The ticket is delivered within the SeatGeek app, and you can walk to the gate with just the barcode. I have the app on my phone, and I used it the other day to buy my Astros-Orioles tickets in Baltimore. SeatGeek really makes life easier for all of us because it does all the price comparisons by searching the major ticket sites and ensuring that fans like us can get the best possible deal. SeatGeek also gives you the most bang for your buck. The system grades every ticket on the site from 1 to 100 based on value, and that gives you the best chance to find any underpriced seats and get good deals for your budget. Now, here's the most important part. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your rebate, download the SeatGeek app and go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code. Enter the code LORockets, all one word, no spaces, and SeatGeek will send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. It couldn't be easier, so with the 2016-2017 NBA season rapidly approaching, I'd urge you guys to download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. With that said, we've got Salman on hold, so let's go ahead and get him connected and talk a little bit more about these new Rocket stories. All right, now Salman's on the line with us. Salman is the managing editor of Red Nation Hoops, one of the many great independent blogs covering the Rockets. Does a great job. You can follow him on Twitter, at Red Nation Hoops. Salman, how's it going today, buddy?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Can't complain. Pretty excited based on the RPM rankings. We're actually at that point in the NBA calendar where a random RPM ranking is about the only thing there is to get excited about. But I've been talking the last couple of minutes about, you know, the Rockets ranking fifth in the West, really being closer to third than they are to eighth, and trying to convince myself that it's reasonable. If you were to see the rankings as, you know, Kevin Pelton of ESPN ranks it, and he's got the Warriors, the Spurs, then the Jazz, Clippers, and Rockets. Is that feasible?
Yeah, so where I look at it is I start with the win total that he gave the Rockets. So it was around 45.5 wins.
Yep.
And so where I projected them to be at this season was around 45 to 50 wins. So that's right around where I see them being. And if you put them at 45.5, that's pretty much right where I, that's pretty much right in line with what I projected. And he has them being around 16th in defensive efficiency.
Yep.
So what I thought there would be was around 15th to 20th. So I think that's right around there. And then he had them as being a top five offense. So I think this ranking, as far as a win total, yeah, it's completely in line with what I was thinking.
Yeah, I did want to talk about the defense because RPM has the Rockets as a top five offensive team. I think we all expect that, barring some kind of surprising injury to James Harden or something unfortunate. Defensively, of course, they were not a 15th or 16th best team last year, and now Dwight Howard's gone, which, you know, in a vacuum, you would think that that might make them worse. However, you could certainly make the argument, and it seems that RPM is buying it, that perhaps the defense is going to be better this year because the pieces fit better. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, there's a couple things to look at it. First, I think the biggest element in all of this is Clint Capella, and I'm super high on Clint Capella. I'm writing an article on him right now. I think he's going to make a huge leap. He's an excellent pick and roll defender already. I think he can make the jump to be a good rim protector, and he's kind of what you want in a modern NBA big as far as being mobile enough to defend pick and rolls and being disciplined enough to protect the rim. So I think he's in line for a really, really good year. Like possibly a most improved player because of the minute jump he's going to get this year. That's where you kind of want to start with things. Is he good enough to make up for Ryan Anderson's deficiencies and, you know, kind of help out the perimeter play? And also, I think Trevor Ariza is due for a bounce back year as far as defensively, because last year he was horrendous, and especially in transition, he was just such a bad defender. And I think that was just because he just didn't care. His attitude wasn't where, like, along with most of the team, like, I think around after the 5-game mark, he just stopped caring. I think that mentality was, you know, if I'm going to be the only one defending, you know, why should I? And I can certainly understand that. And I think this year with a new staff, a new attitude, you know, and your refocus on the defensive end, I think you're going to see a better Trevor Ariza this year. And if you look at the other pieces around, Patrick Beverley's no slouch on the defensive end. Obviously, he's not what he was 2 or 3 years ago, but he's still a good defender. And so that's three people out of the starting lineup that you would have reputations of being an above average defender. And so I think 15th to 20th is kind of what you would expect defensively for them this year. And you know, I can't really argue with 16th. I think that's a good placement. I don't think they're going to be terrible. I think they're going to be much better than they were last year.
Yeah, one thing I would argue with Ariza, I thought you hit the nail on the head. He was inexplicably poor at times last year, and I think there's just a snowball effect. You know, when you look at these rankings, you can't really focus on the win total too much because a lot of them, you know, you see so many teams bunched in that 43 to 46 win range because the talent as a whole, you know, is pretty comparable on a lot of these teams. But what happens when the season gets going is that you have a, you know, kind of a snowball effect. And with the Rockets last year in certain elements, especially on the defensive end, I think for large parts of the year, they did stop caring. And so whether it be positive in a positive way, chemistry-wise, a negative way, that snowball effect is going to lead to some teams being, you know, a few games better than what you might think and some being a few games worse. Looking at those teams on the worst end, one thing that really struck me about this were the Clippers and the Grizzlies. He's got the Clippers basically just a half game better than the Rockets, and his reasoning for that is that the Clippers have a lot of players in the rotation that are on the wrong side of the aging curve. You know, guys that are in their 30s and could be primed for declines or injuries. Similar thing with Memphis, who RPM has missing the playoffs. They had them as a 39-win team ninth. I'm not necessarily asking you, you know, hey, is Memphis going to miss the playoffs? But do you think that teams like the Clippers and Grizzlies might be getting too much of a pass based on their prestige? Because it seems like RPM is sniffing something out, at least in terms of the rosters, with some of these more veteran teams.
This is kind of where I disagree with Kevin Pelton's rankings.
Okay.
People have been predicting Chris Paul has declined for many years now, and it just hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
I think his decline is going to be more gradual than what people are expecting, and I still think that team's so good. I mean, they were a top five offense last year again, and they made it a top five defense. So I mean, I can't expect them to decline. And as far as the Grizzlies, I think Chandler Parsons is an excellent addition to that starting unit, and they were so injured last year. I can't imagine them being worse than they were last year, considering Marcus Gasol was out for an extended period of time. Mike Conley was out for an extended period of time. I mean, at times, Tony Allen was one of the best players on that team last year, and that just tells you how injured they were. So I expect them to be better than the Rockets and in the higher tier. I think Pelton kind of overestimates how big of a leap the Jazz are going to make next year. Because, yes, they're going to be much better than they were the previous year because now they actually have a point guard in George Hill, and now they have a deeper bench in Joe Johnson, Boris Diaw. That roster looks really, really good, but I just think they're still a little bit too young. It's going to take some time for them to mature and really grow as a team. There's going to be some growing pains bringing in George Hill at the beginning of the season. I don't think it's going to be a seamless fit. That's kind of where I disagree with Pelton in terms of his rankings.
Yeah, the Jazz strike me as a little aggressive too. You know, you can see it on paper. You can see why the model might like them. But yeah, there's going to be some growing pains. There's also a matter of who for the Jazz is going to make a play late in close games. You know, you'll see it at times from Gordon Hayward, but whereas the Clippers have Chris Paul, the Rockets have James Harden, you know, you don't have that one guy on the Jazz who you can trust in the final 2 or 3 minutes of a game to steal you a game that you might not deserve. And so that's why I think putting them at 3 is a little aggressive. In terms of Memphis, you mentioned Chandler Parsons being an upgrade. One thing that RPM also sniffed out, RPM has Dallas not being good at all. They've got Dallas as a 33-1 team that's like 11th or 12th. I don't have the rankings in front of me, but they're far out of the playoffs. And, you know, if I had to put over or under, yes, I'd say Dallas is over that just based on Rick Carlisle and Dirk Nowitzki. However, one thing I think the model correctly sniffs out, I think replacing Chandler Parsons with Harrison Barnes is a pretty big downgrade. So I would agree that, you know, you don't ever count Dallas out with Rick Carlisle, but if I had to bet, I would put Dallas in the 30s. Where do you have those guys?
That's kind of tough because while I do expect Rick Carlisle to be a very good coach, and I expect Dirk to still be a positive on the offensive end next year. I'm not really that high on Harrison Barnes. I do yep. think he's going to develop well. I don't think he's going to be good next year right away. I think in the second and third years where you're really going to see the payout in that contract that he signed this summer. And if you look at the rest of the roster, I mean, they kind of ran it back. And I don't see them – I mean, I just see decline in terms of, you know, Dirk's going to continue to decline. I don't think that the rest of that roster is necessarily going to be as good offensively as they were in prior years. And defensively, it's just, I mean, Harrison Barnes and that's it. I mean, if you look at the rest of the roster, I mean, they have Bogut now. So, I mean, that's certainly a plus. But, I mean, is that really enough to make you a compelling defense, you know, good enough to make the playoffs? I would argue it isn't. And I expect them to be right around 9th, 10th as far as trying to make it into the playoffs next year.
Yeah, that's about where I have them too. We can agree there. Turning back to more positive subjects, at least with regards to the Rockets, you had a great tweet last night about how, just kind of poking fun at the notion of how we're at a point now where the mere idea of James Harden winning the MVP award is laughable to people when he was just second place 2 years ago, and really first place in the players' MVP voting. And so this whole offseason, we've had all these positive vibes. You know, part of the reason why Rockets fans are buying into the Rockets potentially being a mid-tier playoff team is James Harden being a true superstar player. When we had you on the show a month ago, you had a great story about the maturation of Harden. We've heard all the great stuff about how he's in phenomenal shape. He's working out hard. We heard just this afternoon from Mark Berman that he's leading a players-only mini camp next week in Los Angeles. So he seems to be taking his role really seriously, yet somehow, you know, the odds that I've seen have him as like a 16-1 shot for MVP and Russell Westbrook as, you know, 2-1 or 4-1. Have you ever seen such a bizarre, I guess, split in terms of where, you know, I think for those of us that follow James Harden, there's a logical case that he's one of the top five players in the NBA, and yet the perception, for whatever reason, is so wildly different.
Yeah, this is a topic that I struggle with, especially the past couple years, with James Harden and then just players in general. It's the subject of likability and how it affects how we view players and how bias comes into that. And I'm not necessarily saying there's too much of that going on, but I think it really affects the way we view James Harden and Russell Westbrook as players. I'm not sure there's much of a discrepancy there as far as how close they are in actual production and in actual game.
I'm right with you. Yep.
I think they're right. You know, they're neck and neck. Yep. You know, 1A, 1B as far as, you know, actual players. And you know, as far as who you think is better, that's purely subjective as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's really where it comes from. And you look at the surrounding cast of both teams. I mean, you can make a case that both teams are right around the 45 win mark. I mean, Victor Oladipo is probably going to progress a little bit next year. Steven Adams is going to be one of the best centers in the NBA next year. But you can make the same case for the Rockets. I mean, as far as being a top five offense next year, I mean, I looked at the stat a couple weeks ago, and if you look at since 2011, every top five offense has won at least 50 games. And so that's 5 years. If you look at the past 10 years since 2005, I mean, every team except for the 2010 New York Knicks won 50 games. So, I mean, to expect the Rockets to win, you know, 41 or like 35, that's just bizarre. I mean, you're expecting the Rockets to be 29th or 30th in defensive efficiency. If you're expecting them to be a top five offense and you're expecting them to be a bad team, that just doesn't add up. So I think it comes in as far as how we view these teams, how we view these rosters. I think they're going to be pretty similar. I'm really interested to see what kind of year Russ has this year. And same with James Harden. I think it's going to be much closer than what people perceive.
Yeah. My final question for you is this reversible with regards to the perception? Because I see a lot of Rockets fans on Twitter that seem to have this defeatist attitude of, you know what, you know, maybe they can be talked into believing in the team, but they think the media is out to get them, that, you know, Harden's never going to get a fair shake. But then I go back, you know, we're just 14 months removed from when media really gave him a lot of love. You know, you could argue that, yes, he deserved it over Curry in the MVP voting, but he certainly got, you know, even if he finished second, he certainly got pretty heavy consideration. And you know, the team overachieved. That's what I go back to. You know, that 2014-2015 Rockets group that went to the Western Conference Finals, they overachieved their preseason expectations. They were a feel-good story. Last year, you know, yes, Harden took an unfair beating, but the team did underachieve greatly. You know, this was a perceived championship contender that finished 41-41 and as an 8 seed. And so while it's not fair what happened to Harden, at the same time, it's not like just randomly, you know, he was picked on. The team did underachieve. While it, you know, it did take him a while to get into shape and play hard on both ends. And, you know, we can say, well, it's due to his offseason ankle injury and whatever else. But it did happen. And then, of course, we all know that there's a long-standing kind of bias between the media and teams with Dwight Howard. So, you know, just between me and you, I can see a case that, you know what, with no Dwight Howard, with the Rockets kind of being overlooked in these offseason rankings, once the games get going, and if they overachieve, that Harden can make up for some of this and that it's not an irreversible phenomenon. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it really has to do with team success. Like, it's largely dependent on how the Rockets do this year. And as far as how people perceive them, I don't see any, like, to me it's inevitable that the Rockets are going to surpass everyone's floor level expectations of this team. People don't expect much from this team at all.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the Kevin Pelton model that I saw yesterday, I don't see any team ranking them particularly high. You see them from 8th to 12th as far as in the West standings wise, and I think it's pretty ridiculous, because you know you hear them, you hear the ranking, and then if you look back at just James Harden's career in general, James Harden's never missed the playoffs in his entire career, and that's never mentioned. But he's never missed the playoffs ever since he was drafted. Even last year, in the midst of a chaotic year, he didn't miss the playoffs. So I expect them to, you know, if people are really expecting them to be like a really bad team, I mean, I think his reputation is going to rebound this year.
Yep.
Because it's inevitable that they're going to exceed everyone's expectations, and that's really where you're going to see the build back up. Because if you remember in 2014, it took till game, I think it was like game 20, to where his, you know, the MVP campaign for Harden really started to pick up. So it's not going to happen right away. It's not going to happen out of the gates. It'll take some time before people start to notice how good the Rockets are going to do next season, and I think that's where you see the respect kind of come back.
Yep. Right there with you. Salman, thank you so much for the time. Toss out, you know, your website, social media, where folks can find you if they want to hear more from you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at RedNationHoops, and you can find all my work at RedNationHoops.com. I'm going to be writing a column on Clint Capella, so you can look forward to that in the next couple of days. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Sounds good. Thank you for the time, and we'll be talking with you again soon, okay?
Thanks for having me on.
Later, man. That was Salman Ali of Red Nation Hoops, great and underrated reporter within the Rockets community, and also an expert on all things analytics. He does really good work when it comes to understanding the league as a whole, and so I felt like he was a natural fit for dissecting the Kevin Pelton piece a little bit more. Also, I thought he was really strong on James Harden, because you guys have heard me say it for weeks now about how quickly that his perception can turn around. I do not agree with the national, or I shouldn't say the national narrative, it's the local narrative that, well, the media is out to get the Rockets and out to get James Harden, and he's just never going to get a fair shake. I think there's a lot of people in this, you know, social media cycle that people forget what happened more than just a few days ago. And we are only a year removed from when Harden was seen as an overachiever. When these Rockets, not much was thought of them. They were a 2 seed, won the division, went to the Western Conference Finals. And Harden was the talk of the NBA. He made a very real push to be MVP, finished somewhat close second to Stephen Curry, and did win the Players MVP. So no, I don't think Harden's reputation is permanently tainted. It's just one bad year in which everything went wrong. And unfortunately, these days, fair or not, everything kind of gets thrown under that same umbrella. But now that the expectations are lower, it's pretty easy to see it going the other way as well. It's just in this social media cycle, everything is so amplified. We see it as it is, and we have a tough time, you know, thinking back to even as short as a year ago or spinning it forward. And it just kind of feels like that, well, whatever the narrative is now, that's the way it is. And in reality, you know, it's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. And so there's a real big opportunity for James Harden to take a leap forward this season, not just in his personal play, but in his perception around the league as well. And that positive note really feels like a good place to wrap up this show. Thanks again to Salman Ali of Red Nation Hoops for joining us, and I also want to thank SeatGeek again as our first initial sponsor. Remember, download the SeatGeek mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. If any of you out there are also interested in potential sponsorships with us, please feel free to email us at lockdownrockets@gmail.com because we can offer you some pretty great rates and a very targeted demographic of intense listeners. For everyone else, you can talk to me on Twitter at Ben Dubose, and you can also follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnRockets. We do regular Twitter mailbag segments, so please don't hesitate to reach out to us and let us know what questions you may have about the team. And if you're also an NFL fan in Houston, don't forget you can also follow our sister podcast known as Locked On Texans. That's hosted by Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle, and it's a part of the same Locked On podcast network. Again, this is Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790, and as always, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show. Stay tuned, because we should have another great episode before this week is done. In the meantime, have a great week, and I'll be talking with you guys again very soon.